The Northern Plains. The opposition was based on a treaty signed in 1868 between the United States and the Lakota Nation at Fort Laramie in Dakota Territory, which recognized Lakota sovereignty in their Dakota-Wyoming homelands and hunting grounds, including the sacred Pahasapa, the Black Hills. With the discovery of gold in the Black Hills a few years later, this treaty was illegally repudiated by the U.S. government. Not until the 1970s was the justice of the Lakota Treaty claim recognized in court. In the year of the 1868 treaty, a former governor of New York State named Horatio Seymour was nominated as the Democratic candidate for President of the United States, and the history of the Lakota people might possibly have been less tragic had the Democrats won, since Governor Seymour held strong convictions that Ulysses S. Grant did not share about the offense to his own constitution in the young nation's shameful treatment of the native peoples. Every human being born upon our continent, or who comes here from any quarter of the world, whether savage or civilized, can go to our courts for protection, except those who belong to the tribes who once owned this country. The worst criminals from Europe, Asia, or Africa can appeal to the law and courts for their rights of person and property, all save our native Indians, who, above all, should be protected from wrong. Seymour's unpopular opinion appeared on the title page of Helen Hunt Jackson's A Century of Dishonor, 1881, one of the first books to deplore the wrongs inflicted on the tribes who once owned this country. There is but one hope of righting this wrong. It lies in appeal to the heart and the conscience of the American people. What the people demand, Congress will do. It has been, to our shame be it spoken, at the demand of part of the people that all these wrongs have been committed, these treaties broken, these robberies done by the government. The only thing that can stay this is a mighty outspoken sentiment and purpose of the great body of the people. Right sentiment and right purpose in a senator here and there, and a representative here and there, are little more than straws which make momentary eddies, but do not obstruct the tide. What an opportunity for the Congress of 1880 to cover itself with a luster of glory as the first to cut short our nation's record of cruelties and perjuries, the first to attempt to redeem the name of the United States from the stain of a century of dishonor. The Congress of 1880 did not redeem the name of the United States, and that century of dishonor was followed by another. Less violent, perhaps, but more insidious and sly, as the frontiersman gave way to the railroad man and miner, the developer and the industrialist, with their attendant bureaucrats and politicians. And the Congress of the 1980s will do no better, to judge from the enrichment of the powerful and the betrayal of the poor to which it has reduced itself under President Reagan. The poorest of the poor, by far, are the Indian people. It is true that in our courts today the Indian has legal status as a citizen, but anyone familiar with Indian life, in cities or on reservations, can testify that justice for Indians is random and arbitrary where it exists at all. For all our talk about suppression of human rights in other countries, and despite a nostalgic sentimentality about the noble red man, the prejudice and persecution still continue. American hearts respond with emotion to Indian portraits by George Catlin and Edward Curtis, to such eloquent books as Black Elk Speaks and Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, to modern films and television dramas in which the 19th century Indian is portrayed as the tragic victim of manifest destiny. We honor his sun dances and thunderbirds in the names of our automobiles and our motels. Our nostalgia comes easily, since those stirring peoples are safely in the past, and the abuse of their proud character, generosity, and fierce honesty, remarked upon by almost all the first Europeans to observe them, can be blamed.